Thank you so much for that introduction. Like she said, my name is Tracy Hawk, and I'm here to share a little bit of my master's research with you from the University of Arkansas. So just to start, I will introduce the nematode I'm working with, then I'll talk a little bit about the compounds I'm working with, and then I'll jump into my research. So I'm working with the southern root knot nematode, Meloidogyne incognita. The root knot nematode in general has an extremely broad host range. I've heard it estimated at around 700 plants, most of which include cultivated crops and ornamentals. This nematode also has a very patchy distribution in the field, as you can see from this picture on your right. It really prefers the sandier soils because it needs those large pore spaces to move around and cause infection. And so, like we know, you're not going to have one uniform soil texture throughout a field, so you're really just going to find this nematode localized in those sandier portions, which causes the patchy distribution. And then, probably the most obvious thing, the major symptom of this nematode is going to be the galls it forms on the roots. So this is a very extreme picture of the galls. This is not from my research. This is actually from some field data from Dr. Foskey's lab this last summer. But this just shows you how severe the galling can be and how detrimental they can be to the plant. So why is it important that we study this nematode, especially in Arkansas? The Cotton Disease Loss Council got together and they estimated that the Arkansas disease loss estimates due to this nematode were 2%. Now, I know that's not a jaw-dropping number, but that adds up to approximately 21,000 bales lost to this nematode, which makes it quite significant. So if we look at this map on the right, if you look over at Arkansas, you can see that the majority of cotton production happens along the eastern portion of the state. That's along the Mississippi River Delta. And so that's where all of these disease losses are happening, where that cotton production is. So we have this nematode in Arkansas. It's causing disease losses. What is being done about it? What are the pathologists and extension specialists telling these growers in order to manage it? One of the first options could be crop rotation, so some non-hosts to the southern root knot nematode and recommended for inclusion in cropping sequence could be rice, peanut, or some grain sorghum hybrids. Oftentimes, though, these alternate crops may come with alternate equipment like planters or harvesters, and that might not be an acceptable option to all growers. Another management practice could be with the use of resistant cultivars. Now, while there are southern root knot resistant cotton cultivars, some of them could come with a yield drag. Other times, they come with herbicide technology. So if you're a grower that has glyphosate resistant pigweed in your field, this would not be an option for you because you would not be able to utilize that technology. And lastly, and probably one of the more notorious management practice, is with the use of nematicides. Now, historically, nematicides are thought to be relatively toxic. They have quite a bit of rules and regulations on this because of them. Some examples of some more notorious nematicides could be methyl bromide, aldicarb, and an example of a nematicide, a well-known nematicide that I'm working with, is abamectin. So abamectin is a natural fermentation product of the bacterium Streptomyces avermitilis. It's a chloride channel activator, so what that means is it floods the nematode with chloride ions, it causes paralysis and eventually death. And abamectin has been estimated to have a relatively short half-life, around 30 days, so that's just at a month. And so because of that, it's not considered very persistent in the soil. So here on your right, you see this picture of the abamectin molecule, and it's also said to have a high affinity to bind to soil, and for that reason it doesn't move through the soil as well as we would hope. And so because of this, there's a need for new nematicides, less toxic to the environment, less toxic to the people that are applying them, that are more persistent in the soil. And a good example of this could be the compound flupyrim. So I know we've talked about flupyrim a little bit today, but I'm just going to give a little introduction. It was originally a succinate dehydrogenase inhibitor, an SDHI fungicide. Less than a decade ago, it was found to have nematicidal properties. And it was actually reported as part of Julia Hyken's work at NC State to also be an SDHI nematicide. And so what that means is it messes with the electron transport chain in the mitochondria, and it causes the nematodes to not get the energy they need, and they die. And unlike abamectin, compared to abamectin, Flupyrim has a relatively long half-life. It's been estimated at 360 days, so that's nearly 12 times that of abamectin. So I've given you a brief introduction to the nematode and the compounds I'm using, so I'm going to jump into my research. So the objective is to observe the effect that flupyrim has on nematode penetration, establishment, and reproduction. The experimental design I'm using a sterilized loamy sand, and I'm infesting the soil before planting the seeds. I infest the soil at 2J2 per cc of soil, and this happens in large batches, and carefully mixing in the nematodes to make sure they're thoroughly distributed, but also you have to be very careful with them because when you are mixing them, they are quite fragile. And then with that soil, I plant it in pots, or I put it in pots, and then cotton seeds are planted in those pots. So the treatment groups I'm using are abamectin-treated seeds to act as my positive control, flupyrim-treated seeds, and my non-treated control seeds. All of these pots were arranged in a randomized complete block design, and all of my treatment groups had 5 replications in the greenhouse. So here we have a generalized life cycle of this nematode. And as you can recall from my objective, I'm breaking up the life cycle into 3 different aspects. The first is penetration. So we have this J2, we have this viniform nematode moving through the soil looking for a root to infect. And when it encounters a root tip, was it successfully able to penetrate? Was the flupyrim able to prevent the nematode from penetrating? The second aspect is gall formation. So the nematode has successfully penetrated the root system. Was it able to migrate through the root, find its permanent feeding site, and then start feeding and inducing these giant cells, which are the galls? And then the last aspect was reproduction. Was it able to differentiate into a female? Was it able to reproduce those eggs and start this life cycle all over again? So how am I quantifying those 3 aspects? Well, for penetration, we're harvesting those plants at 7, 14, and 21 days after planting. Those plants get brought into the greenhouse, and they are stained with acid fusion. As you can see from that picture, the acid fusion is very good at holding a stain into the nematodes. You can also see that meristematic tissue is also good at holding onto that stain, but you see the nematodes on either side of that tissue. And then the second aspect we are quantifying is gall formation. So at 21, 28, and 35 days after planting, those plants were harvested and brought into the lab, and the galls were counted. And then the last aspect is reproduction. So those roots were harvested at 28 and 35 days after planting. They were brought into the lab. The eggs were extracted with a diluted bleach solution. And then from there, the eggs were counted, and eggs per gram of root was calculated. So all of the data was subject to an analysis of variance, and then mean separation was done with Tukey's HSD with an alpha at 0.05. And it's important to note that the results I'm showing you are from one experiment. While we did run several of this experiment last summer, it was quite a trial and error. We had some where we had no infection, so we would have 0 numbers. We had some where we realized we needed to change the soil, where our seeds were too old. And so these results, unfortunately, are from just one experiment. So it's important to keep that in mind. So let's start with penetration. If you look on the x-axis, we have our harvesting dates. So we have 7, 14, and 21. And on the y-axis, we have the number of nematodes per root system. It's also important to note that each individual harvesting date had its own analysis of variance and mean separation, but I put them all on the same graph so that we could see any visible trends happening throughout. So if we start with 7, you see there's a very obvious trend of numerically less flupyrim and abamectin compared to our non-treated control. 14, we have the same thing, and we even have separation between our abamectin, flupyrim, and our non-treated control. And then 21 days, we see the same thing. So if we move on to gall formation, it's the same thing on the x-axis where we have our harvesting dates of 21, 28, and 35 days after planting. And then on the y-axis, you can see the number of galls per root system. So for 21 days, we see the separation of abamectin and flupyrim compared to our non-treated control. We see the same thing at 28 days, but then for 35 days, we see separation between flupyrim and abamectin and the non-treated control. All of those were significantly different. And then if we look at reproduction, we have the same thing with our harvesting dates on the x-axis and our eggs per gram of root on the y-axis. we see that we have the same trend. However, we did not have separation at 28 days, and we did at 35 days after planting. So if we conclude the research, we had less nematode penetration, galls, and eggs per gram of root in abamectin and fluapyrim compared to our non-treated control. And fluapyrim and abamectin provide comparable protection to cotton roots. So it's important, like I said, that this is just from one experiment. However, if we look back in the literature, I don't have this graph in my PowerPoint, but if we look back at the literature and some work done that Dr. Foskey did in 2006, he had abamectin and a non-treated control with cotton in very similar research to what this was, and we see that he didn't have significant differences between his treatment groups. So I'm curious to see, as we do more trials and as this experiment is able to repeat itself several times, if we have trends that grow stronger, if we have new trends that emerge, and so that will be interesting. And I would like to thank Dr. Foskey and his lab, the Department of Plant Pathology at Arkansas, and the Division of Agriculture. And with that, I'd love to take any questions. So that's a good question. Let me go back to this slide so it's a little obvious. So you can see that we have dates that overlap, right? 21 or 28 here and 28 here. So when we count galls, so the sampling is destructive, but the processing isn't necessarily destructive. So when we count the galls, we don't destroy them so that we can then extract the eggs. The same thing for when we stain them. I would count galls before I stain them. But then for each harvesting date, we had 5 reps of each treatment group in the greenhouse. So I could pull them for each harvesting date and still have more for the next harvesting dates. So it wasn't like the roots that were pulled at 7 days were also the roots that were pulled at 14 days. So that is a great question, and I don't have this information in this PowerPoint because we're still going through it, but one thing I did notice was when we were counting galls, we tried to measure how far down the root system the galls occurred. And so one thing I noticed is for the non-treated control, they seemed pretty uniform throughout the root system. A lot of them were on the taproot. But then when we looked at abamectin and fluapyrim, most of those galls occurred in the lower two-thirds of the root system. So that could give some insight as to whether fluapyrim is providing protection this far or this far. That's actually another objective of my research, is to see the length of protection we can get from fluapyrim.
More questions?
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.